But I remember sitting there and being like, I'm really in pain. And like, and just starting to write. And I was like, God, I don't even know if I should be writing this. You know, like I wrote it on the beach sitting there in the moment.
Hi, I'm Bianca Stone. Welcome to the Ruth Stonehouse podcast. Today, we're talking with the poet Justin Marks, who is the author of this beautiful new book, The Come Down, from Publishing Genius. He's also the author of You're Going to Miss Me When You're Gone. Oh, You're Going to Miss Me When You're Bored, Barrel House Books. A million in prizes from new issues and the chapbook, We Used to Have Parties, one of my favorite chapbooks. He's one of the co-founders of the incredible press Birds LLC, and he lives in Queens, New York with his family. Justin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. We actually don't live in Queens anymore. We live in Manhattan.
You moved to Manhattan?
We did. We did. We went from Manhattan to Queens, and we were Queens for 10 years and then came back to Manhattan.
I think that's awesome. I haven't been to New York in like a year, and I'm very much looking forward to coming and visiting you all there. So
yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm really excited to talk about The Come Down. I wanted to start asking you what the process was like for you putting this book together and how it maybe differed from your past books. I felt reading this one that there was a real shift. There was a real shift in tone and a real urgency. I mean, it did come out fairly recently and during COVID lockdown. And that's such a unique time for a book to come out. although when I was reading the book, I could tell too that that some of the poems were talking about not recent events. So tell me a little bit about how long you've been working on this book and these poems.
Yeah, sure. I was trying to figure that out the other day, actually. It's somewhere between 5 and 8 years. I can't remember exactly. I guess everyone will know this at some point, but one of the things the book deals with is me getting sober. And so that's a big benchmark in my life. And I do remember some of the poems in there about wanting to get sober were written before I got sober. So that's actually a little bit more than 8 years ago. But I think, you know, they were just things I was writing. I think, you know, probably it, because I also put out a book in between, the book with Barrel House. So I think, I don't know, I want to say 5-6 years I worked on it. Which
these
is
poems, they felt, and they're the poems actually don't have titles. There's only the book title. So this was really a unified book that it couldn't be incorporated in your other book that you put out, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been fascinated by memoir. I think it's super interesting. It's just a really fascinating genre for me. I never really felt like I had a memoir in me, but I felt like there was a story I needed to figure out. And if I could do it in poetry, that would be awesome. Cause I don't think I have like the patience or discipline to like really write like a prose book. Right. So at some point it became, you know, after reading things like Claudia Rankine's Don't Let Me Be Lonely, Bluettes by Maggie Nelson, a lot of Kate Greenstreet's books, I started thinking like, this is the way. This might
You mentioned Anne Boyer in the first poem.
I do. And just thinking like, these kind of, story-ish books that our poems and our individual poems, but they're all linked and they're maybe titled, they're maybe not. I think I want to do that. I think I could do that. So that's kind of, you know, probably about 5 years, I was like, oh, I think that's what this book could be. I think that's what these poems could be.
As sort of hybrid memoir.
Yeah.
So you consciously knew that there was a lot more vulnerability at work here. There was a lot more confession in a way about quote unquote real life.
Yeah. Like, it evolved. It wasn't like I knew what the parts were, you know, like the, because of COVID, I haven't done any readings or anything. So like, right. I sort of forgot a lot of what was in there. So I actually sat down and just sort of like skimmed through it to be like, oh yeah, okay, this is what was in there. And, you know, it has pretty distinct sections. That was all really, or, you know, just kind of evolved. I didn't like sit down like someone might with a novel or a memoir and say, okay, first three chapters are early life, you know, that, you yeah. know, I didn't do that.
Yeah, of course
it evolved
you
very organically.
Yeah. Right. And that's what it feels like. I mean, the form on the page is very fragmentary. Mm-hmm. So it feels like a very organic unfolding, and that we're really only getting snippets of the whole story. So it doesn't feel like overly wrought with, linear intention, although it is very linear. And it's interesting that there's one poem where you say like, okay, like, let's get you up to date. I'm sober now. fast forward, I'm here. Even though we are, you know, in a way it's already sort of established before that, but there was moments like that it bled into like essay territory. Not just memoir necessarily, but this sort of like investigative, like I want to like investigate my psyche through you know I although you know I say that but it it's such it doesn't really differ from how poetry works actually in general. You know, it's a really funny thing. You know, it's kind of like we have to say it to ourselves in order to like write the book.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of difference between like, I'm going to write a memoir I'm going to write a lyrical memoir and I'm going to write a book that's like very grounded in my story, my experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think stylistically the poem, you know, the kind of fragmentation that you're talking about, that's pretty consistent in my previous two books, you know. I don't, you know, there was definitely an effort to like, and even like little prose pieces, I think I've definitely had in my first book, I can't remember necessarily in my second, but it became about sort of pushing things stylistically, but also, you know, I realized recently, like, this was the first book for me that was actually kind of therapeutic to write. Mm,
you think? I mean, it's like an understatement. I don't mean that in any way, but like, it feels, you know, it's very like, you are like facing stuff, you know, like you're really looking at it.
Yeah. Like there's some poems in there. There's a poem, maybe it's toward the end, I can't remember, but it's about vulnerability and me sort of not being able to do it. Like, I remember very specifically, we were on vacation on the beach. I have a fraught relationship with the beach. I love the ocean. I love the ocean, but I'm really sort of, I'm not comfortable on the beach.
Yeah, same.
And I was just like, really struggling with this idea that, like, man, I just don't know how to do this thing of being vulnerable and being close to people. And I remember I wasn't like a melodramatic, like, you know, goth, not that there's anything wrong with goth, but I remember sitting there and being like, I'm really in pain. And sort of, just starting to write. And I was like, God, I don't even know if I should be writing this. You know, like I wrote it on the beach, sitting there in the moment. And then, of course, like, I mean, the germ of it. And then, you know, did all the like poet stuff to it, like, you know, spiffied it up and, you know, cut out things that weren't working and all that sort of stuff. But it was the first book where I felt like I really took a look at things other than just like trying to write poems out of the mess of language that goes through my head every day.
Right. I really want to read a poem just to give people a sense of what's going on here. And then I'll have you read a poem. But I love this one so much. In this first line, I think, is really indicative of the book. The future terrifies. Care is a mammal emotion. Last night I dreamt I was Captain America shitting himself. Today the imperial theme from Star Wars blares from my neighborhood firehouse. You look really sad, a stranger handing out flyers to a comedy show says to me. According to the book I'm reading, the universe is a finite thing growing into something infinite if you're willing to wait an eternity. We all mean well, I guess. I think, you know, it's the word terrifies comes up a lot in this book.
Yeah.
It's clearly, you know, it's not, the speaker is terrified of certain discoveries that they're making. And yet there's so much, of course, as we know that when we face things that are very terrifying that we're not avoiding anymore, that there's a transmutation that happens, that we further ourselves when we make a discovery. Did you feel like in writing this book, I mean, you said it was very therapeutic, but did you surprise yourself by the time you came to the end of it?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I feel surprised by it now. I don't know if by the time I came to the end of it, it's hard to remember a moment where like the book was done and the editing began, you know, that sort of separation you have between like.
The editing journey is such a massive separate.
Yeah. And I kind of do them all at the same time or on parallel tracks or whatever you want to call it. But I definitely like, you know, after it was done, I still periodically, I'm like, wow, not that I walk around thinking about my own book all the time, but like,
come on,
periodically, I'll just be like, yeah, I really went through something and I kind of, I feel like I really faced something.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'm just kind of like, I don't know how to feel about that. Sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, is that it? But other times I'm just like, I don't know how I did that. Other times I'm really proud of it. When I do think about it, it can be a different set of emotions.
Well, I got the sense when I finished the book that it wasn't finished, that this will keep going, you know,
that this,
and I think that all great self-inquiry is like that. It doesn't feel finished. It feels like the beginning of something that will continue on.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. Like after I do remember one thing sort of creatively after I was quote unquote done with it, which was like, I did not want to talk about me. Like I was like, no more first person, like, you know, and also when I, you know, really sort of got the thing that would become the book done, it was around 2016. Donald Trump had just won the election.
It was a dark time.
It was a dark time. And I remember distinctly thinking like, I've got to try on different things. And I remember very distinctly, it was leading up to the election and I was just messing around with almost trying to write this poem to my daughter, anticipating that Clinton would win. And almost trying to write this poem to my daughter, kind of, not really, I don't know. I was thinking about her. I was thinking about women. I was just thinking about the future and, you know, say what you want about Hillary Clinton in comparison to Donald Trump. I was like, well, this, you know, anticipating that she would win and trying to write this poem. And then she didn't. And I just was like, oh, man, I guess my point is I remember thinking there's just different stuff I've got to work through and it's not me. It's more like, how do I grapple with this really terrible thing that's happening, that just happened to our country.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to think about how writers and artists thought of their creative future at that time, because and then the next year followed, which was, you know, a huge amount of civil unrest that the priorities were very shifted away from self-inquiry. And I think it was hard to think about that kind of thing. So I understand that. However, I don't think that, you know, self-inquiry is separate from politics.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
But I know, it can feel like, you know, similarly, I was like, after my last book, I was like, I just don't want to write about my family anymore. You know, like, I'm just like, I'm a little like sick to my stomach over it, you know, and you need to like, right, when you don't want to keep writing the same book, right? You want to, you want to like challenge yourself to like go elsewhere. And I think it's totally normal to feel like a sort of rejection to what you were doing in your last book.
But what I have discovered and those poems have evolved into, you know, my next manuscript. And I hope I've sort of, like, it's still me, right? It's still that kind of, it's not like I'm suddenly writing these like wild political poems. It's because I just don't know how to do that well. I think if anything, it's that self-inquiry, but more in a public, like, here's some really intense stuff happening in our society, and like, here's how, like, I'm dealing with a lot of these sort of things that go along with it, like the terror and feeling very vulnerable and just feeling very like powerless and at the mercy of way larger forces in a way that I maybe hadn't felt before.
Yeah. Well, we're almost 20 minutes in, and that just won't do without having you read a poem. I would love it if you would read one of the poems I felt was really important in the book was the one that starts, "My father accidentally lighting himself on fire," on page 46. And I really would love it if you read that and page 47.
Okay. "My father accidentally lighting himself on fire in front of me when I was four. Strange encounters with inappropriate adults, their illegal activities. I learned from an early age to be silent, keep secrets, be the lesser character. Knew that if I said the wrong thing to the right people, the right thing to the wrong people, the wrong thing to the wrong people, I could ruin lives. After a while, even strangers look familiar. My father standing at the kitchen counter, shirtless, freshly showered, hair slicked back like a minor god, imperfect, de-seeding his weed, rolling joints for whatever trip we were about to take."
There's so much vulnerability in the child in this book. And I love how it's juxtaposed with the speaker's own experience as a father, then seeing the vulnerability literally of his children and having to face that as well. And just the parental experience mirrored. And there's so much about two that I feel is really powerful in this is the speaker's relationship to other human beings in their life, the most important human beings. We're talking about the parents, we're talking about the wife and the children. And those are the people that we see in these poems. And all of them, you get this sense of unease with the interactions between them, and and certainly with the father there's probably the most unease. Tell me a little bit about that, how that's working in this book. I don't even know how to pose this question, but
I think I understand what you're getting at. When I sort of like, I was talking to someone early today about like, you know, they're putting out a really personal book, and we were talking about, you know, how it's kind of scary to do that. And those two poems are like, I'm glad you picked them, but those are like, those were poems that I was like, oh man, I don't know. Like, am I crossing a line here? Am I like saying too much? I'm sorry. So the question was the unease. I think, so like, I'm kind of an uneasy person in general, I've gotten a lot better through a lot of, you know, introspection and therapy and various other things, and just kind of having to like be an adult and have adult relationships, you know, I've gotten better at that sort of thing. But, you know, to be biographical for a minute, like that first poem about, you know, my dad catching on fire, that was a real thing. You know, I was like 4 years old, and he was trying to start a barbecue and ran out of lighter fluid. So took a little gasoline from his motorcycle, and so, you know, it, I don't know, some must've gotten on his hand or something like that. And, when he lit the, it just, you know, like, it was just like, he was on fire and it was really intense. And I, you know, I only remember bits and pieces of it because I was, you know, only four, but you know, one story my mother told me later was that when I saw him in the hospital, when he was recovering, I was really scared to go over to him.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, his burns were on his leg and his arm. So it's not like, you know, there was, you know, a physical reason, you know, like, who still looked very much like my dad. And there's pictures from that I remember seeing growing up, and, you know, he's smiling, you know, it was okay. Like,
yeah,
very, very serious situation, but, you know, he got the care he needed and he was fine, and he's been fine ever since. But I do think that, like, at, you know, growing up and as an adult, and even just now, like, there's a certain, and I'm not saying like it's caused by this, but that became a really powerful metaphor for me, because I do have this sense deep down that, like, things are just going to kind of blow up all of a sudden.
Right.
You know, it's that, like, waiting for the other shoe to drop kind of anxiety.
Yeah, like, my caretaker could, like, burst into flames at any minute.
Yeah. And it was nobody's fault, you know, it was just an accident. But I do think a consequence for me was this, I do have this real sense of unease. And I don't think I consciously walk around thinking, like, oh my God, my relationships could blow up. But there is a sense of, like, I do have this kind of unease about, like, the status of things. Like, I always need to know, like, it's in good shape, right? Like,
yeah.
Anxiety.
I was wondering if you could read the poem on page 23 as well, that starts, "Whatever you say I am is what I am."
Sure. "Whatever you say I am is what I am. A child holding a lighter, a really cool weather event. I'll be that. The trauma and the story of the trauma I was told. Your touch is intimidating. It feels too good, is what I think when my wife touches me. Massive gaps in my development, unidentified signals from deep space. Under the skin is more skin, increasingly sensitive. Nary a wound salt water can't heal."
You know, when I read the other poem and then this poem, there's so much, all our experiences bleed into one another and inform everything in our life. I see so much. It's interesting with poetry to work out the memoir, because it's a perfect place to highlight the complexity of our experience and how we don't understand it necessarily, and how our feelings about everything that's happened don't line up with truth necessarily. They don't line up with fact.
Yeah.
And I felt in this poem, especially with the line "a child holding a lighter," that and you feel it throughout the book, that the speaker feels so much guilt, so much culpability, so much responsibility for the way that they are, that is somehow unacceptable to other people. But it's really their own inability to accept themselves that keeps perpetuating it. It's such a, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but, like, honestly, I feel like what I loved so much about this book is that I felt a kinship with the speaker, I really appreciated the, I think that a lot of poets deal with this kind of conflict, and trying to understand history and memory and emotions now versus emotions then.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really heavy thing, you know, and I don't mean like I did this heavy thing in the book. I just mean like that emotion, that and inhabiting that space of sort of knowing, you know, like we all kind of have our biography, right? Like the events that happened to us. But, you know, how I feel about, you know, those events when they happened versus now is really different.
Yeah.
And I'm trying not to lose my train of thought, but it's.
Well, the trauma, you say the trauma and the story of the trauma I was told. And then it goes right into your touch is intimidating. It feels too good. Almost the unease maybe of the trauma of the story and the trauma I was told and the conflict there makes it so hard to have intimate experiences now because you can't, yeah. You kind of can't, you're not, you haven't worked out whatever that was then.
Yeah.
And I think fire is a really interesting symbolic event as well that could happen because it affects the skin so intensely.
Mm-hmm.
It's such like a human fear, but it's also like the human awe that we have, you know, fire at our fingertips that we can. And so there's just a lot at work there. It's interesting that the skin comes up in this poem and the wound.
Yeah, I hadn't even really thought of that, but that's really interesting. I mean, I think the thing, to be totally transparent, like this is talked about in 12-step stuff, right?
Right.
Like,
what?
This idea that, I think it's the idea we're circling around, is that there are things that happen to you, but there's a I don't know what the right word, I don't know if it's there's an ownership of the way you respond to it, right? Even if you have no control over it, because it's just so emotional and so terrible and so whatever, like you now have that experience and you own that emotional response, and there's the initial emotional response, but it doesn't have to stay that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I don't know. I don't want this to turn into like a 12-step or self-help therapy thing.
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's things I used to be, you know, really hurt about or really angry about or whatever. Like we all have those things. And there came a point in my life where I sort of realized like, A, the anger is doing me no good.
Yeah.
And B, the experience is sort of mine to adapt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like I can honestly say, you know, I don't, you know, with something like my dad's accident, like I don't blame him. You know, I have none of those like, oh, this terrible thing happened to me. Or like, you know, having bad teachers or something like that. None of that, like, I'm really losing my train
of thought. No, it's not. It's well, I think it's awesome to think about it actually in a way of the writer who is given experiences, and it's really what they do with those experiences that transforms the experience. And I mean, it's completely true in sort of becoming emotionally mature, is that things happen to you that were beyond your control and you're not a victim of them anymore because they're not happening anymore. And now it's only you hurting yourself. So I see, you know, when I see in this book that the speaker is working through their anger, the anger is so intense and it's so destructive, even at a really young age, it seems understandable that they would go towards alcohol to to relieve that, but also the alcohol becomes a catalyst for the anger.
Yeah.
And then of course the movement through that, the discovery that it's making it all worse, and is the evolution of the book.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Odie, I'm doing a podcast, so you're going to have to give me 5 more minutes, okay? Okay.
Oh, wow. Are we that low on time already?
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. This shit goes so fast.
Yeah.
I would love if you would sing us out with a poem. Maybe 2, maybe a short one and a longer one. One that I really loved was the one about your every child terrifies, I think is how it starts. Which is definitely a little nod to Rilke, which I love. and maybe just start with a little baby one too. There's a couple really, there's so many just wonderful little tiny short ones. You could just throw one in to start and then read that one.
Trying to find. Okay. So start with like a small one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Every Child Terrifies is on page 66.
Okay. And I'll try and find a...
If this PDF corresponds.
It does.
I love your references to other writers in the book.
Yeah. All right, here's a couple short ones.
Yeah.
What I want to be is out of the way. Copulate with abandon, because abandon is all that will have me. Mm. What I want to feel is ecstatic all the time. Special. Use big words and never second guess myself. Look in the mirror as little as possible. I'm glad you laughed. Like there is, it's so hard to, how do you cover a whole book in like, you know, however long conversation we have, but like, I wanted definitely to bring some sort of humor to it all. Right.
It's there. It's so there. The self-deprecating humor is really the best. I love it so much.
And I think, if I had to, you know, sort of devoid life of all the emotion or whatever, of like, how would I define life? Like, oh, it's whatever. I would just say it's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like absurdity is such a, like, I love absurdity. I think it's what makes life so damn funny and interesting.
Absolutely. And you can't talk about the most hard, devastating traumas without acknowledging the fucking absurdity of it all. Yeah. And my favorite poems are the ones that are about the almost unbearable things that happen to people, and they all imbibe an absurdity and a humor in them as well, because you know the inner unity of opposites between funny and fucking not funny is what really sparks an electricity.
Every child terrifies. When we first brought them home, I would hold either of my twin babies and wonder, if they died, where would they go? To think I would go nowhere when I died was fine. To think they would too was impossible. They were so little, just days old, their existence so strange and wonderful and new, too perfect to endure. I'd recently seen a movie, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, in which the title character ages backwards. The filmmakers went all the way with it, took Benjamin back to when he was a baby. And in one of the final scenes, while his ex-lover and now caretaker is holding him, the infant button closes his eyes peacefully, as if he were just going to sleep. But really, he dies. Or perhaps my preoccupation with death was a way to try and read, to comprehend those first days of parenthood. The kind of reading Mary Ruffel says is an extension of time, and in which you, quote, die and watch those you love die until the very dizziness of it all becomes a source of compassion for ourselves and for the language we created, unquote. Language, my children, my death obsession, a desire, Ruffel might say, to make everything okay.
That's such a good poem. Such a good fucking poem.
Thank you.
Love that poem so much. Justin, thank you so much for talking to me about this book. And yes, there's always so much more to cover, but I think this will get people excited about spending their own time with the book and looking up more of the interviews and reviews of the book too. I just love this book so much. Thank you for writing it.